I will call this April the 13th, 2005 meeting of the Senate Committee on Transportation order. I welcome everybody here today. Glad to have you here for our transportation meeting. And we're going to start off. We're going to run the agenda just as it is. We'll start with Senate Bill 1027, and I'll ask Senator Walker to come forward. Welcome, Senator Walker.
Welcome, Madam Chair. Vicki Walker, State Senator, District 7. It's a pleasure to be in your committee for the very first time this session.
I know.
It's a delight to see you up there with a gavel in your hand. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1027 is a priority bill. I had it drafted as one of my two priority bills after my constituents, Mr. and Mrs. Lyons, came to see me to tell me the very sad and tragic story about their daughter's death. I will let them tell you about her death. And it was quite, it was very, very difficult to listen. It was very difficult to understand that this child lost her life simply because there was not a mirror on this truck. She was run over by a UPS truck. This bill, because the UPS driver could not see in the front of the truck. This bill will require commercial vehicles to have a mirror, a forward, we call it a forward cross-view mirror, and Mr. Lane will exhibit that to you when he testifies, so that a driver of a motor truck will have a clear and unobstructed view to the front of the truck. As the testimony will show, these mirrors are on school buses and postal vehicles and other commercial-type vehicles, but UPS does not have them. The Lions sued UPS. They settled their case, but they had asked that UPS would install the mirrors as part of the settlement, and UPS declined. So we are here to make sure this doesn't happen to other children, because not only is it a tragedy, Madam Chair, for the Lions, it's a tragedy for the driver of the UPS truck.
Oh, sure.
This man has to live with what happened every single day of his life. And I get shivers thinking about that, because I think most of us would be devastated if we had taken the life of a child, whether it was intentional or unintentional. And this man, I'm sure, did not intend to run over this child. So, Madam Chair, with that, I'm very pleased that you put this bill up for a hearing so quickly once we got it drafted, and I will turn it over to Mr. Richard Lane, one of the attorneys for the Lyons, and then Chris and Brandy Lyons will talk to you about their case.
Thank you very much. Well, I'll ask Mr. and Mrs. Lyons to come, and also Richard Lane.
Thank you, Chairman Verger, members of the committee. My name is Richard Lane, and I am here on behalf of Mr. and Mrs. Lyons today. I've had the pleasure of getting to know them and representing them, and I come here before you to endorse Senate Bill 1027, which would require a forward visibility enhancement device to be placed on certain vehicles operating in neighborhoods where children actively play, and that the to prevent what happened to Mr. and Mrs. Lyons and their daughter Kennedy from ever happening to another child in the state of Oregon. I have given the committee members a package of materials. The photograph on the first page is Kennedy Lyons. The second page involves an accident photograph scene, and I do want to again repeat that this vehicle was moving forward, that there is a lack of visibility while the driver is seated for standing in the cab. There's a blind spot immediately in front of the vehicle. Next page is our request for the legislation. The following page is a letter that was written by the City of Eugene Police Department. And Detective Doug Jordan is seated here behind me, and I'm going to ask Detective Jordan to address the committee. The next couple of pages are some photographs that will be explained by Mr. Lawrence Wolbrock. He was the lead trial lawyer in connection with Mr. and Mrs. Lyons' lawsuit. The following pages of the packet are various types of vehicles that are operating currently in Oregon, such as the Crystal Springs delivery truck with an example of a forward visibility enhancement device shown in the bottom photograph, waste management refuge truck with the overhead forward visibility enhancement device, buses that operate at the Portland International Airport, school buses, and then the last two pages are examples of what's a tripod convex mirror, and Mr. Wilbrock will explain that, used in connection with the United States Post Office vehicles operating in neighborhoods, and that photograph was taken up in Portland. The very last photograph, if you look up in the corner of that, you can actually visibly see the road immediately in front of the driver, all the way down to the white mark of the parking line in front of it. With that, I would like to introduce Mr. and Mrs. Lyons and let them talk to the committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lane. Welcome, Randy.
Thank you.
We're glad you're here today, and we want to hear your story so that it will help us help other people.
Okay. Sorry, this is still pretty hard for us.
If you'll just give us your name.
My name is Brandy Lyons. I really thank y'all for having us here, by the way. I really appreciate it. I'm from Eugene. I don't really know what to say other than there was no reason why this happened, and there's no reason why another family should have to go through this. I just wish that UPS and the majority of the delivery trucks out there would at least look at the problems they might have with their trucks, and it's too bad that it takes something like this to make a company even look at the possibility. I'm sorry, I just don't think a package is worth a person's life, child, adult, it doesn't matter to me. And I just want it to change. I want no other family to have to go through what we have been through the last almost 4 years. It's not worth it, not for a package to be delivered, not for anything. And I just really want it to be fixed. I want the problem to be fixed.
Sure.
All right. Chris Lyons from Eugene also. Just to add to that, I think the way I perceive these delivery vehicles and the companies themselves, they're always in a hurry for competition. So they do put lives in danger every day. And they're not looking at all the safety features that need to be looked at on their vehicles to enhance or to make sure that nothing like this happens. I mean, they weren't even willing to look into it until we kept pushing and pushing and pushing. Came down to come to you guys to see if we can get a bill passed for them to even recognize that they actually have a problem.
Chris, that would be my question, and perhaps, Mr. Lane, you may want to answer it, but was there some agreement after this on the part of UPS with the parents about having some added visibility to the truck?
Chairman Berger, members of the committee, the case was resolved. There has been no, what I would suggest is a mechanical solution made to the UPS delivery truck. There have been efforts to improve what I'll call their administrative fix in driver awareness of a forward visibility problem, but not the what we know is a guaranteed mechanical design fix to ensure that the driver knows exactly who or what is in front of his vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
if that answers your question.
Yes. All right, I'm going to open it to questions. Rick?
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. Mr. Lane, I'm curious, I don't know how far along you went. Did you actually get prepared for trial for this?
Madam Chairman, Senator Metzger, members of the committee, we were right on the on the urge.
Well, then that's my question then, because I'm just assuming the research you would have done. In researching for this particular case, did you find any evidence in terms of how large a problem this has had? I mean, did you find other instances of where this unfortunate circumstance was not just an isolated one?
Madam Chairman, Senator Metzger, prior to the time of the commencement of discovery in connection with the litigation, the United States Parcel Service defendant and the plaintiffs executed a confidential agreement regarding over 12,000 pieces of paper from the UPS files. I'm concerned about answering too specifically your question. Our investigation led us to conclude that this indeed had happened before. I believe that the UPS people would dispute that.
Is that? You always ask legislative counsel, are you supposed to be immune from testimony for the legislature? I don't know how that affects your discovery.
I absolutely agree with you. I'm not sure where that
is. Jeff is back here, too. Well,
he's out of here.
He's trying to leave the room.
But I just think it's, I think it's, one of the issues is in terms of not just UPS, but you have DHL and others. I'm just kind of wondering from an industry, if you found evidence that, that there was reason to know that these were a problem based on previous incidents, and that this wasn't something that just happened and no one had thought about it or had reason to believe they should have done something.
Okay. Madam Chairman, Senator Metzger, I'm going to try to answer it a different way.
Okay.
As part of our discovery and our process, we filed a Freedom of Information Act request to the United States government, and we were provided with numerous research studies, analysis regarding their decision-making, testing, associated workup, evaluation of products, consideration of frequency in their research to decide whether the United States Post Office trucks that deliver packages in neighborhoods needed to be outfitted with some sort of forward vehicle enhancement device. And the United States government, as a result of that process, made a decision that it was for safety purposes.
Okay. Thank you. You did that very well.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I just want to make a comment because this is a really sensitive issue and I'm really concerned about that. I have to go testify right now. I'm just, since you haven't testified for the legislature before, sometimes we have to go do other things, so I don't want you to get the impression that I'm not interested in the moment, but I have to testify. 3:30. I'm glad I heard your testimony. Thank you. I'll be back.
Thank you. All right. Other questions? Senator Przanski?
Madam Chair, just a comment. The Lions came by. I also met with them, and I appreciate them following through and Senator Walker being willing to bring this to our attention after the deadline on stuff to be followed in the general sense. And I think that we will, in fact, see action on this. It's one of those things that was demonstrated to me when they were in my office as to the unfortunate situation, and it seems like, unfortunately, you actually have to have these type of tragedies occur before you actually get, I think, what I'm going to call reasonable common sense compliance. So individuals, the tragedy is it's multifamily here, and clearly the individuals, and I think when Detective Jordan comes up, he'll be able to tell us as to individuals, including such as law enforcement, where they're in situations where they have to use deadly force. It's not something that they walk away without having a personal impact. And this is exactly what this gentleman, I'd have to believe, is going through.
It's widespread, isn't it? It's the driver, it's the family, it's the people that have to attend to the emergency people. So it's very widespread. And I'm sure people, you don't get over those experiences. You always remember them. Any other questions? All right, I'm going to have you three step back. Thank you again for being here for your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the committee.
And I'm going to call Lawrence Holbrook. Is that right? And Doug Jordan.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee. Thank you very much for hearing from me. My name is Doug Jordan. I'm a detective with the City of Eugene Police Department. I've been a police officer for 21 years. I've been with Eugene almost 16 years. I have kind of specialized in traffic crash reconstruction investigation since 1988 when I was with the Clackamas County Sheriff's Office. I've been a member of the major collision team with the Eugene Police Department since 1991. I started with Eugene in 1989. I started our current crash reconstruction program because I really felt that this was an area that was that did not have the expertise that it needed, that these situations are more than accidents. In our field now, we don't use that word. We use the word crash. Accident has the connotation in our society that there's nobody at fault, when almost always there's some fault. There's some human error involved, if not mechanical. I started taking a lot of training and classes in traffic crash investigation reconstruction. I think now I have more than 650 hours in the classroom. In 1994, I sat for an all-day exam. It's called the ACTAR exam. It's the Accreditation Commission for Traffic Accident Reconstructions. And so I've been certified as a traffic crash reconstructionist by a nationally certified organization, actually international. I was a founding member of the Forensic Accident Reconstructionists of Oregon, which started in September of 1994, and have been active in that. I was secretary treasurer in that organization for 4 years. I've been teaching this in this field since 1992, first in just investigation, and since about 1993, also in reconstruction. So I'm not trying to blow my own horn here or anything. I just want you to understand that I'm not just talking off the top of my head. I've been to many, many crashes. Every single one of them is tragic. But I'm going to tell you that I'm not here today because I was just asked to come here. I feel it's a very much a privilege for me to come and testify before you. And this is not this was not an easy crash for me to go to either. And I know I'm a police officer. I'm not supposed to get emotionally involved. But as you pointed out, it's not just the family that's affected by these things. Every one of us that was there was very deeply affected.
I appreciate you giving us your background, though. I think that's very helpful, and it is very meaningful for your testimony as well. And I thank you for that.
Anyway, as far as the investigation, what we were able to show was that, as previously stated, the UPS package truck had actually driven up Leah Avenue and had backed into a driveway that was common to several residents, one of which was 76 Leah, where the Lions reside. And after the driver, and this is based on his statements that we took from him, he was unable to deliver the package at the address that he was going to in that common driveway, and went back to his truck, hopped in the right side door, which is the common door that the driver goes in, got in his seat, and started forward, driving forward in the truck. He did not move to the front of the truck. He did not clear the front of the truck first, did not visually look there. And our investigation showed that Kennedy Lyons, who is I think about 4'6", 4'4", to that effect, was standing directly in front of the truck along with her bicycle, maybe standing, her bicycle being closer to the truck than she was. Without going into great detail, The evidence showed that the truck, as it moved forward, pushed her down. It drug her bike. She pretty much went down where she was at. And as it moved forward, it drug her bike, and there were scuff marks along the pavement to show that. The right rear duals of the vehicle basically went across her upper torso and her head, crushed her head, and probably, you know, killed her instantly. We determined fairly soon, I think, in this investigation that it was not a criminal matter, but it was a serious matter. And we did a lot of investigation on this crash and determined that there was a blind spot, a very clear blind spot, that the driver, be he standing by his doorway, be he standing in kind of center between the doorway and the seat, he would not be able to see below about 4'7". When he was seated in the seat of the truck, he couldn't see below 4'11". And the way we did this is we set a tape in front of the truck where we determined Kennedy Lyons was standing. I was about the same height, about 5'8" to 9", about the same height as the driver of the UPS truck. And so placing the camera at my eyes, took a series of photographs, and then I could visually also see on the tape, you know, what the measurements were. And so we were trying to determine, you know, could this have been prevented if the guy just would have looked from inside the truck? And our conclusion is he could not. He could not see the area directly in front of his truck from either standing or sitting. And see, what I mean is see someone as short as Kennedy Lyons, or someone that was shorter than 4'7" and 7.5", stand when he was standing, or 4'11" if he was seated. That's a huge blind spot. And it's my opinion, and I have been able to give my opinion in Lane County Court several times, and in Crook County, it's my opinion as a traffic crash reconstructionist that had this vehicle been equipped with the forward cross view mirrors, that this tragedy could have been prevented. Someone asked earlier if I could impose and try to answer the question. I think it was Senator Metzger. If anybody knew of any other types of crashes similar to this, and I can say that I believe it was just after I left Clackamas County for Eugene that my buddies on the crash reconstruction team there, who I stay close to even to today, had a school bus crash that they investigated, in which a very similar situation to this, a child had wandered in front of the school bus. The driver had no idea that child was there, and subsequently ran them over, totally not meaning to do so. But that was before the buses were equipped with forward cross-view mirrors. And the United States Post Office, you know, the school districts, and many other companies and agencies, entities, have voluntarily put these mirrors on their trucks. And I applaud them for that. And I'm one that doesn't want to see everything legislated, but I think if this is a situation that can save lives, and I think this is a really simple fix. It is subject to human error because the person has to look in that mirror, but I think that the average driver is fairly responsible and would look. And if they look, they would see if there's something or someone in front of their truck. And I think this tragedy could have been prevented, and I'm speaking for myself and for the two other officers who signed this letter along with me, who were unable to be here today. Thank you very much. I appreciate this opportunity.
I thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Senator Prezant.
Madam Chair, I guess, again, I want to compliment Doug. I've known him since he's come on, Eugene. I was at that time prosecuting for the city. I know how sincere he is as to the work he's done and what he's given to us. I think just for the disclaimer, I know that he's not here on behalf of the city. He is here in his own individual capacity. But his time with the city has demonstrated to me, you know, why we need individuals that are willing to actually come forward before us and use their expertise and explain to us what they found. So Doug, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good comments. Thank you, Senator. All right.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Lawrence Wolbrock. I'm an attorney. I've been a trial lawyer in Portland, Oregon for about 28 and a half years. Before I get started, let me tell you that I had to tell the Detective Jordan, tell them about yourself. He's a very modest fellow, and he was kind of reluctant to tell you his qualifications. I said, tell them. They need to know what the source of this information. And it was our luck in this case to find an accident investigator with his skill and experience to be able to put this case together so we could understand it. In my 28 and a half years as a lawyer, this is one of the more tragic cases that I've been involved in. I want to tell you just a little bit more about the facts. UPS drivers, from our investigation, are very much under, and for your observation, are very much under time pressure, I think. And this is a way to help them do their job, where if they forget to do something, as this driver did, which was to walk to the front of the vehicle, they have these mirrors, which I'd like to demonstrate for you in just a minute, to help them save time. I also want to make one qualification, and I'm glad Senator Metzger has come back in. We are under a strict confidentiality order in this case, and I wanted to tell you for the record that the evidence that we had of another incident was not from any UPS documents. It was from our own independent investigation. So we are not violating a protective order by disclosing something that was in a document that we are not supposed to tell you about, okay? The information we have of another incident that happened in which another child was hit was from an independent investigation my office did through my investigators and no UPS documents. I just want to make that clear for the record. The litigation was over before we were authorized by the Lyons family to approach Senator Walker, and I want that to be clear from the record. This is not an effort to somehow gain some advantage in civil litigation. That was over before we even came to her. Finally, I'd like to say that by passing this legislation, you do what sometimes is a favor to all of society because you make the playing field level. No package delivery truck can say to you and to this government in this state, well, if we have to do that, we are at a competitive disadvantage compared to my competitive company, Airborne or DHL, because you've required all the companies in the state to use these mirrors. And that makes a level playing field. It doesn't say to the careful company, you will be at a competitive disadvantage. It makes them all be careful. And now, Madam Chair, if I might, I'd like to direct your attention to just a couple documents in this packet to just explain to you. And then if I might approach you, I'm used to asking the court, may I approach the bench? I'd like to do that for just a second. But if I could bring your attention, to page 5. On page 5, you will see yellow duct tape. Do you see that? Which has taped this to the rear forward cowl, or the front forward cowling of the UPS truck. And this is a demonstration we had prepared for court. This is what's called a busboy forward view mirror. Okay, and I'm going to show that to you in a little bit as you permitted me to approach you. If you turn the page, you will see what the driver would have seen by looking into this mirror. This is page 6. If you turn it sideways like this, this is what the driver would have seen. Now, keep in mind, as Detective Jordan has testified and as we found out, on page 5, if you were in the cab of the vehicle, you could not see Kennedy Lyons or her bike as you were sitting in the driver's seat. The only way you would have seen her is if you had this busboy mirror, and I have no stake in busboy company. That's the company that makes these. I've never even met the people, but we found out about these. They use these at Portland Airport, by the way, on the bus that takes you back and forth to the parking lot, and that's how I found out about them. If you were in the driver's seat and looked at this busboy mirror, you would have seen Kennedy Lyons on a bicycle. If you looked at the busboy mirror, but if you were just sitting there, as Detective Jordan said, you would not have seen her. Now, if I may, I want to show you my feet.
Are you sure?
I think
no.
See if I get it right.
There you go.
So if you were a driver in a vehicle and you were looking in the busboy.
Yeah, I see your shoe.
You can see my shoes.
Uh-huh.
And if I was smaller than the dais and you couldn't see me from where you're sitting, you would see me with the help of this mirror. The other type of mirror arrangement that is commonly used that I don't think is quite as effective, but is used by the United States Postal Service, is in the packet of materials, and this sticks up over the cab and looks down, and if you look at pages 11 and 12, you will see the United States Postal Service arrangement, and you'll see the mirror up there. Mm-hmm. This is through the good offices of my postman. He let me get into his van. And if you turn the page, you will see what he sees, and he even sees the white hash mark on the pavement for the parking spot that he can't see from the cab. So, as we evolve as a society and a civilization, things come along like the busboy and these convex mirrors and make it possible to make a very complex and intricate industrial society to be more safer. And we ask you to support this legislation so that you level the playing field for all of the companies, but at the same time help to prevent a tragedy like occurred in this case from occurring again. And I thank you for your time and opportunity to present this.
I thank both of you for your testimony. Are there any questions of our last witness? All right. Thank you very much. All right. One of the things that I wondered about is that we don't have anyone from any of the truck companies that are speaking in opposition. Senator Walker, did you have anyone approach you or speak to you in opposition or for reasons they would not want to use these kinds of mirrors? Is there something I haven't heard?
Madam Chair, Senator Walker, again, the answer to that would be no. This bill has been dropped and had its first reading some weeks ago, and no one has approached me about this legislation at all. And I would like to say that I'm so strongly opposed to confidentiality agreements. We had a bill in Judiciary this afternoon addressing that issue with regard to public bodies. And both Senator Prozanski and Senator Witz had heard that testimony. Unfortunately, our statutes allow for confidentiality agreements, but what you get from that is you get situations where you can't find out really what happened and why we need to fix a problem. I experienced the same situation several years ago when my daughter went on a tour to Mexico, which became a big to-do. And as we investigated the case, we found that six other children had died on these tours, and the tour company eventually was pushed out of business because of the pressure I brought to bear on the industry through the Federal Trade Commission and through the state of Oregon and the Attorney General. This is a similar situation. We have a simple fix to this problem, and UPS has chosen not to voluntarily put these on their trucks. I believe FedEx uses these on their trucks. Is that correct, Mr. Lane?
Some
of them use it, but Madam Chair, this is a simple fix, and they aren't here to testify. Of course, UPS and FedEx and all those other companies are big companies, but they can get here if they need to be. My point is, school buses, the U.S. Postal Service, they understand the safety concerns with this issue. And I really, frankly, don't see why the Oregon State Legislature couldn't help this along and prevent the death of a child. We had the testimony from the detective that this had happened in Clackamas County, and we had the testimony here from the lawyers that this had also occurred elsewhere. But because of confidentiality agreements, we probably won't know how many other children have been killed in these kinds of circumstances, and that's the danger of confidentiality agreements. But that's a discussion for another day.
All right. Thank you very much, Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members of the committee.
I'm going to close the public hearing.
Madam Chair, before you close it, I'm wondering if we'd have Detective Jordan just come back up this for a moment.
All right.
And, Doug, I'm looking at what's called for in the bill as to being what the violation would be. I see that this would be the same as a Class C, it'd be a Class C traffic violation. And my quick review of 815.235 is operation without rear view mirror and exemption penalties, and it's basically the same penalty. I'm wondering if from your position as a as an officer and someone that's been involved in this type of traffic reconstruction, if you think a Class C traffic violation, which has the maximum penalty of $180, is an appropriate sanction that should be considered, and you think it should be enhanced?
I've never been involved on this end of it, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. It seems rather as a light penalty to me as a police officer. But anything that would help advance, you know, people or advance people having to comply with the law, I would be in favor of. But it does seem that it is not very much of a penalty.
Other questions?
The only other question I have, and it's not going to be for Detective Jordan, but I don't know if we heard from the other attorney as to the cost of those applications, what those actually cost. And I think that's just something I'd like to just put on the record so
okay.
We know what the dollar amount is, because I think it does come up to one of those situations of the cost of doing business and whether or not someone's going to comply or not.
Madam Chair, Senator Przanski, this busboy arrangement is $45 for one, $90 for two. The convex mirror, which I bought at the truck supply store, was about $40.
Okay.
And if you bought, I think, thousands of these, you'd probably get a lesser price.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Any other questions? All right. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1027. And just for the benefit of Mr. and Mrs. Lyons, what we do here is we hold a public hearing. I did not schedule a possible work session today, so this bill could not move today because I have to post work sessions ahead. So we're going to close the public hearing for today, and thank you again for coming.
Thank you.
All right, next I will open the public hearing on House Bill 2106A.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. House Bill 2106A authorizes the Department of Transportation to establish by rule reasons for issuing a replacement driver's license permits or identification cards. It would declare an emergency effective on passage. We have a no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact received on the measure. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. I'll call Robin Freeman.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Today I bring before you House Bill 2106. Oregon law provides for only three types of driver's license or ID card transactions, and those are original issue, renewal, and replacement. An original issue transaction is the first time a license or ID is issued to a person. A renewal extends the expiration date of the license or ID, and a replacement transaction covers all other situations. Statutes currently only allow the department to issue a replacement license or ID card when a license or ID has been lost, destroyed, or mutilated, the name or address has changed, or a new number is requested due to fraudulent use. However, other situations warrant the issuance of a replacement license or ID. Currently, original issuance and fees are required when customers should be allowed to receive a replacement driver's license or ID card. DMV feels that customers should not be required to pay original issuance fees, which are $29 to $124, for certain transactions when replacement fees, $21 to $24, more clearly reflect the department's issuance costs. This bill gives the department the authority to determine by rule the criteria for issuing a replacement driver's license or ID card. The department believes that issuing a replacement license or ID card is appropriate in the following situations: when you're adding or removing license endorsements or restrictions, when you're replacing a license or ID card, when a person reestablishes their residency in Oregon after they've moved to another state, when you're exchanging a valid without photo license for a license with a photograph, when you're replacing a license or ID card issued with an error on it, when you're issuing a license or ID card after reinstatement or suspension of it or cancellation, and when you're issuing a license or ID card confiscated by law enforcement or the courts. The department's policy has been to handle most of these scenarios as replacements. A strict reading of the statute would preclude us continuing this practice. We hope that the committee can support House Bill 2106. It creates statutory authority for the department to set eligibility criteria in administrative rule and allows customers to pay a more reasonable fee for a replacement of driver's license and ID cards. Thank you.
Ms. Freeman, I have a question. What criteria does ODOT use to determine that the person asking for the replacement or the renewal card is in fact the person who is they purport to be?
Chair Whitsitt, members of the committee, it's the same requirement that they would have for original issuance, and that is proof of age and identity. The only difference with a replacement is that if they already had a photo on file, that could be used as a primary document. They must provide two primary or a secondary document, or two secondary and a, or one primary and two secondary documents for issuance. Thank you.
That being the only witness, we will close the hearing on HB 2106A. Open the hearing on HB 2472A.
2422. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. House Bill 2422A extends from 90 days to 180 days the length of time that a pollution control compliance certificate can be dated prior to registration or registration renewal for a vehicle. We have received a no fiscal and no revenue impact on the measure. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I call Sean Miller and Daryl Fuller, please. Mr. Fuller, would you like to come forward, please?
Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Sean Miller. I'm here today to be representing the Oregon Independent Auto Dealers Association in support of House Bill 2422. Originally, when we brought this particular bill on the House side, we brought the bill, there's a 90-day requirement in current law that the certificate of compliance, and let me back up, Mr. Chairman, because I know several of your districts do not fall within these DEQ pollution control requirements. The Portland metro area and the Medford area are the two areas that fall within this pollution control area, so I know to to some of you who might not apply or in your districts, but in those particular areas, there's a 90-day requirement for that certificate of compliance to be dated not more prior to the motor vehicle registration or the renewal of that registration. And we, because there's many vehicles on an auto dealer's lot, many times they have to go through repeat compliance before they actually sell the vehicle to that to a new owner. So we came in with a 180-day. Changing it for auto dealers. On the house side, we approached the Department of Motor Vehicles and the DEQ, and the DEQ suggested an amendment, just changing it flat across the board, 180 days. There's no environmental impact to this particular amendment, so it was adopted by the committee and passed the House of Representatives on a unanimous basis. Really, the need for us, it reduces the need for auto dealers to subject their inventory to these multiple testings because, again, they sit on the lots more often than not through that 90-day period. And so, again, I know there's Margaret Oliphant from the DEQ is also here to answer any questions on the process, but it's just a simple deal to allow us to be able to DEQ these particular automobiles. I have Jose Pino Mesa, first vice president of the association, also an auto dealer who in the Portland area is very familiar with the process, to maybe elaborate on the experiences that they've had.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name again is Jose Pino Mesa, first vice president for the Oregon Independent Auto Dealers Association. I've been in the car business since 1984, and what we have here is in this Portland metropolitan area and Medford, we have inventories now that through the years new and used car dealers have obviously accumulated more and more of. So in order to be prepared to sell a car and be ready, there's many different situations where a temporary permit or a trip permit falls into place. It's better if we're prepared. If we could possibly have all the cars ready to go, it's a wonderful thing. But many times you're going to have car dealers that don't want to go out and spend the $21 and get this done immediately. So what they do, they kind of wait. But if we know up front that this 90 days can basically be extended to 180 days, we will have many more car dealers that will have their cars DEQ'd and ready to go immediately. And many times we'll sell cars in 90 days, but all of a sudden the thing expires on the 91st day, and then we have to take it through again. But it puts many dealers in violation, and it's something that's just going to make this very easy, and there's no environmental impact. It's something that's going to be better for all of us. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Darrell Fuller, and I represent the Oregon Auto Dealers Association. OADA represents franchise new car dealers in the state of Oregon. This bill was brought forward by the Oregon Independent Auto Dealers Association, the Used Car Dealers Association, so I can't take any credit for it, but if it does pass, I want to be able to tell my members that I was here in support of it so I can take a little bit of credit for it. I think this will help, as they've indicated, our members that have to DEQ vehicles when the registrations lapse while they're in our vehicle inventory. And as I said, when you have bring a vehicle in, whether it's a current Oregon plate that's registration expires while it's in your dealership, or if it's a vehicle that you take in from trade from out of state, any out of state vehicle has to be DEQ'd before it can be registered in the state of Oregon with an Oregon license plate. And I want to commend DEQ because of all the state agencies I work with, DEQ has been incredibly responsive on making this process easier for the dealers. A few years ago, they went so far as to prepare mobile testing units that will come out to the dealership and test the vehicles on our lots so that we're not driving all of our vehicles to DEQ test stations. Took a lot of vehicles off the road, prevented us from having to drive those vehicles and actually be out there polluting the air, if you will, driving vehicles back and forth to DEQ, where they could simply bring in a converted mobile or a converted RV and allow them to actually test the vehicles in our lot. Made things easier for us, made things easier for DEQ. So they've been an incredibly responsive agency, and we appreciate all the work they do to help dealers comply with the rules that we have. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Fuller. Questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Being no other witness signed up, we will close the public hearing on HB 2422A. We position on this 2223 or something?
No, because Senator Metzger has amendments that still have to come to the legislative council. We can talk about those, or you can just spend everyone. Well, nobody signed up because it's a work session only, so it's your prerogative if you want to discuss the amendment that's coming or if you want to wait till the
Rick,
amendments
are
coming. Well, he's here. Why don't we... why don't we go ahead and just have him present what we're going to be getting since we're here. And
tonight we'll open a work session on HB 2223.
Chair Whitsitt, members of the committee, for the record, Kevin Neely, Executive Assistant to Attorney General Hardy Myers at the Department of Justice. We brought you House Bill 2223 that would essentially repeal the anti-panhandling statutes. While we're here in public hearing, Senator Metzger indicated that we may want to be taking a closer look at some amendments that would essentially require indemnification that is already required by firefighters who want to be doing roadside solicitation, require that same sort of indemnification for any roadside panhandler or roadside solicitor. We are working right now with legislative council to get amendments that do just that. They would provide in law a requirement that any roadside solicitors had essentially insurance to do so. There are some tricky constitutional issues that arise there. And I'm sure Senator Prozanski probably remembers a case out of the Eugene area in which there was a gentleman, I believe, named Frog, who liked to peddle books on the University of Oregon campus. And the campus and the city tried to require him to get a license to do that, and the courts didn't look too favorably on that. But again, we're working closely with legislative council to determine whether or not they believe that there are any constitutional restrictions to this amendment. We should know very shortly, and I apologize that we don't have that amendment ready at this time. And if you have any questions, I'd be more than pleased to try to answer them.
Thank you, Mr. Mealy. Is liability insurance currently available in the marketplace for panhandlers?
That's a very good question, and one that I don't have an answer to, but I suspect that I won't speak for the insurance companies, but never known them not to insure things if the opportunity exists. I don't have a good answer to that, though.
Thank you. Yes,
indeed.
Senator Prozanski.
I think Frog's real name is Dennis Miller.
I think that's exactly right. The case is Miller versus the city of Eugene. That's right.
Actually, I'm very familiar with that case. Yeah. You might know. Regarding this stuff, I guess it's one of the things I do want to make sure, and I know that you're crossing the T's, dotting the I's on this, because it's going to be very interesting, because mm-hmm. It appears that the requirement for the insurance for the firefighters is has to be obtained through the Department of Transportation. And so that also tells me that I guess that this would preempt local communities from being able to have greater or additional requirements than what the state would require. And that's going to be one of the constitutional issues, because I think they will be preempted and that they will not be able to make it more difficult. And so I guess the other thing is, I'm wondering if the cities or other communities are going to be able to have any ability to regulate at whatever level, in the sense of time of day or type of clothing that might need to be worn, you know, in the sense of reflective in the evening and stuff like that. So I'm not sure who's doing the work, but whoever's at LC, hopefully they're... we'll take those things in consideration so we don't throw something out there that we find the state litigating something that is going to be unconstitutional.
Thank you, Senator Prozanski. Chair, I'll go ahead and pass that on. Hannah's working on this in legislative council, and again, we've been working with Senator Metzger on it. So I think that I can agree. We don't want to pass something that we're going to end up litigating again. The whole purpose of repealing the statute is to try and avoid unnecessary litigation and, more importantly, the costs associated.
Mr. Chair. Thank you. That's good that Kevin get a preview. We kind of know, and part of the thing was is trying to restore the intent of the statute, understanding what the constitutional issue was in free speech. And so I thought that one thing that would be helpful when Kevin came back after their initial Department of Justice review saying, I think we can do something within those bounds, so I said, well, between the Department of Justice, Legislative Council, knowing the sideboards that they have to operate under, would be to work and see if they can produce something, and we will see. But at least the preliminary diagnosis is it sounds possible. So yeah, we will find out.
Yeah, if I could, I'd add one thing. There is a division in the department that I work for as to the constitutionality of this, and some folks say that it's pretty clear that it is constitutional. Others say the opposite. That's not unusual when you get two attorneys together. I think we can all agree that oftentimes they disagree. I would add that in the spirit of trying to find a solution rather than just repealing this statute, I understand that there are a lot of individuals who would like to find something to do about the panhandlers in their communities, that one of the attorneys in our department did suggest the possibility of a prohibition on roadside solicitation within certain distances from a controlled intersection. I think, as many of you know, at least one of you probably knows better than I, the test when it comes to Article 1, Section 8, the free speech statutes, is essentially one of the factors is whether or not there's likely to be some sort of harm. And at least one of the attorneys in our office believes that having these people at an intersection is more likely to cause harm than if they were not in an intersection. Again, all of these things are tests that would need to be ultimately decided by the courts, but that's another possible solution that's out there. One of the things that we'll look at as we move forward on trying to craft some reasonable amendments that would do something other than just completely repeal the statute.
Thank you, Mr. Neely. Close the work session on HB 2233. There being no other business,
crowd.
Being no other business, we will close the Senate Committee on Transportation for April 11, 2005.